and welcome to Pomcast 2. Thanks to everyone who listened to Pomcast 1, and thanks for listening again. In this episode, Sophie and I will discuss our regular topics. We have Tell and Tell, Colour of the Cast, and an exciting top three. We also have a great interview with the wonderful designer, artist, and knitter, Anna Maltz. Remember, if you want to get in touch, you can email us at podcast@pompommag.com. So sit down somewhere nice and quiet, turn off all your irritating mobile devices, except if you're using them to listen to this podcast. You can just put them on airplane mode. And here we go.
So, Tell and Tell, are you still working on the same projects then?
Pretty much, yep. Because they are large projects. So I have finished the front of my quadrillion with the quadrillion cables.
Mm-hmm.
The back is moss stitch, and I've almost finished it, and watched almost the entire first season of True Detectives.
Good.
Yes,
it is. It good? I don't know. I haven't seen this.
I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Oh, okay. Matthew McConaughey?
Is in it, and he's awesome.
Oh, okay. Good. I finished the heart I was making, and it prompted a lot of the responses that I said earlier, which was great. Wow, what is it? What do we do with it now? And I did fill it with lavender, so that's kind of, it has, you know, as well as visual, it has a sensory nasal capacity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. As well as just being a piece of great art.
Nasal capacity.
Yes, well, the heart is good.
The heart's good. It also prompted, I think, the best compliment I've had about my knitting. My housemate, when I showed it to them, they were like, oh wow, it's like that weird lady on Grand Designs. And Grand Designs is often a program we watch, and there's a specific episode where our two interests combine of making things and knitting, because he was actually talking about Freddie Robbins. And so for my knitting, him to say my knitting was like Freddie Robbins, I felt really cool.
Really chuffed.
Yeah. And if you haven't seen the Grand Designs episode where she's, you know, her and her husband are building a house, then you should. Have you seen this?
I haven't, no. I actually haven't seen Grand Designs in a long time.
Well, it's really good because, you know, Kevin MacLeod, he's always sceptical.
He's always sceptical.
Always sceptical.
That's his thing, isn't it? He's like, yeah, but have you got enough money?
And the windows are late.
Oh, everything's late all the time. But he's like, well, where are you going to live?
But they make this amazing, like, huge space, and because her and her husband have all these incredible collections, and then they sort of divide the space up. You know, it's a spoiler alert. They sort of divide the space up with almost like exhibition kind of glass cases filling everything. So you can see all these wonderful things, but you're still in this massive space.
Wow.
And it's great. And she's an interesting lady.
I will watch that.
Yeah, knitting or architecturally wise, you know.
All the ways.
Yeah.
Very good.
So I'm doing that. So that's finished. So now I'm doing a Brooklyn Tweed hat called Irving, which is like a classic little cably hat. But I've kind of made the brim longer, and so it's kind of like a little flip-up brim. I'm doing that in Blackstone Tweed, which is nice.
Does it have an intended recipient?
Me. Because, you know...
You're so selfish.
No, without, you know, causing any guilt or stress to any persons involved, I have made this hat not once, but twice before. And this hat has been lost, you know, the same number of times the hat's been made. So now, I've got to show this hat, this pattern some love.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
now it means I, you know, I'm great. I'm an old hat at it.
What colour of yarn are you using?
It's like green, but tweedy. The Blackstone Tweed, it's like mainly green, but the little flecks within it are all the colours. So there's a little bit of yellow, a little bit of purple, a tiny bit of blue. For some reason, it reminds me of a Smiths album cover. That's the colour that I...
The one with The Queen is Dead?
The Queen is Dead, exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know my Smiths album.
You know the Smiths album.
I was a British teenager once. I know all the words to all the songs on that album.
Who great doesn't?
Album. Well, exactly. Yeah, so when I finished Quadrillion,
mm-hmm.
Which actually, you know, I think I'm more than halfway through now because I've just got the sleeves left. And I like sleeves because they're knit in the round.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about knitting in the round that I feel like I go faster.
Okay, well, yeah, I can agree with that.
Yeah. And not just because there's no seaming involved, there's just something about it that kind of keeps me going. Anyway, so when I finish that, I want to make Water Lily from Pom Pom Spring.
Beautiful.
2014.
The front cover sample.
Yes, the cover girl. It's a very lovely, for those of you who haven't seen it yet, it's a very lovely top with kind of cap sleeves, and it's stocking stitch and then has like up to kind of the, what is this area called? Upper bust area. Post bust.
It's going to say, it's
like on the shoulders, it's lacy. And then the bottom half of the top is solid.
It's kind of the cusp of the cleavage.
The cleave cusp.
Cleave cusp.
Yes. So I would like to make that, but I haven't yet acquired the yarn that I'll need for it. So I haven't really done any swatching. And I also made some more Thule mitts from winter 2013.
Nice.
Which have turned out to be maybe one of my favourite things I've ever designed.
Oh.
Sort of, yeah.
Kind of self-congratulatory knitwell.
Well done, me. I'm patting myself on the back right now.
This is a good pattern. Oh, who designed it?
Oh, it's really good. Oh, it's beautiful. Oh, and look how it uses variegated yarns to their best effect. Yes, so in light of my genius, I made a celebratory pair for my best friend Annie, who has always been slightly sceptical of knitting.
Yeah.
In a sort of poking fun of me way. And yet has received many knitted gifts despite this. It's like I'm trying to win her
over. I was going to say, like, casual kind of like, yeah, you, but maybe this will change your mind.
And she's always like, oh, yeah, that's nice. Yeah, knitting's kind of weird, isn't it? I'm like, well, you do read Russian grammar books for fun. Not that I'm saying that
well,
that's bad.
It's each to their own.
Exactly.
Yeah. News and reviews. So, do you remember Unravel? That was fun.
That was fun. Yeah, we had there was a late night opening on the Friday, which was really lovely.
Late night visitors such as owls.
Owls, badgers.
Foxes.
Foxes. Yeah, I mean, the foxes outside of London are a bit more respectable, really. Yeah, aren't they? Yeah. So it was a sort of upper crust of the nocturnal woodland scene.
No, it was mainly knitters.
Yeah, I guess, okay, yeah. Well, you want to be, you know, accurate. Yeah, it was great. We had our samples with us from issues 7 and 8, both of which we were selling, and we almost sold out of the ones that we took with us.
Fabulous.
Yes, it was great. We got to talk to lots of lovely people, you know, lots of lovely visitor types and exhibitor types.
Yeah, exhibitors. I really liked Little Grey Sheep. I hadn't heard of their stuff before. Really nice. So they use a lot of, it was like Gotland sheep breed. And I got some of their four ply, and it's called, they had really exotic names. And the one I got was called Always and Forever. And they're
when you said exotic, I was thinking like mango, pineapple.
No, but kind of more poetic names, maybe.
Yes.
And it was really, really wonderful, like deep purpley blues. And I know it was good because when I showed it to you, you went, oh, Lord, look at that. And something's that effect.
I went, what? I went, oh, woo!
that's more of your reaction to it. Yeah, I had a great time because you and Megan were actually helping, and I kind of went along as a punter. Mm-hmm. So I went to visit my auntie and uncle, my cousins, who live in Farnham, which is where it's held.
Convenient.
Yeah, and I just spent a lot of time playing, watching kids' TV and playing on the Wii, which I am rubbish at, it would turn out.
What games were you playing?
Thing called Skylander? Skylander?
I haven't even heard of that one.
Well, I don't know. Like, I was trying to be shown how to do this multiplayer game thing, and then my cousin was like, no, 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 you should play with this character, and all I could do was shoot rainbows.
That sounds amazing!
But no, because then he had a hammer, and like, a flamethrower.
What, you mean rainbows can't beat a hammer?
No, it would seem not, and they just sort of playing an elaborate joke where I was... You know, I was bad at understanding. I realized
were
I became
they taking
old.
The Mickey?
They were taking the Michael. They were taking the actual Michael.
Michael's gone.
They enjoyed it.
When I went home recently and was also with my cousins and a Wii, they made me play a sort of dance game. What's
it just
called?
Just Dance?
Maybe, but it sort of moved on from the dance mat days of my youth.
Yeah.
Where you had to jump around on squares and, you know, it was like the sensitive square pad thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That was great, by the way. I really loved that. But the new one, yeah, so you're like dancing and it tracks your moves.
Oh, no, I've done that, yeah.
And we did Get Lucky by Daft Punk, and that was really fun. But basically, I was just the laughing stock of all my younger cousins because I was so enthusiastic about it and got really annoyed every time I lost, which was every time.
Yeah, I did a lot of losing, but I think it's, you know, obviously it's part of an elaborate plan I have to be the cool cousin because, you know, I play games and they let them win.
Yeah, they'll love you for that. Yes, so Unravel.
Yeah, Unravel.
Let's see, what else? Oh, so John Arbon were there.
Lovely, so lovely.
Such lovely folks, we like them very much. I bought some of their alpaca socks.
I got some of those as well.
As well as some Knit by Numbers.
Oh yeah.
In that one colour pink that I always buy.
Which, yeah, they have a great, like really beautiful tonal rainbow range, which is Knit by
Numbers, yes.
Yeah.
Like Paint by Numbers, but with knitting.
Run that by me again.
So, you see, it's a bit like Paint by Numbers.
You've lost me. Go back.
Rewind!
It's getting silly now.
Getting silly. What else happened at Unravel? Let's see. We met up with the lovely Emily from Tin Can Knits.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Emily. So that was very nice. We had a coffee with her. And we were opposite Fibre Spades.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Fibre Spades.
Hello,
Jen. So that was lovely. But you see, it was quite frustrating because, you know, we were there. We were working, essentially, which was fun, but also meant that I didn't get to look around as much as I would have liked because we were right opposite Fibre Spades. And then we also had some very exciting Icelandic Lopi.
Yeah.
Directly opposite. And we had the lovely Rachel Coopy diagonally. I mean, there were really too many people there to sort of name right now. It was great.
Oh, Susan Crawford.
Susan Crawford was there.
So I can't name them all, but let me just name one more. Yeah, some of her, she had new yarns that she has, like, what is it called, Finella?
Yes, yeah. And actually she's doing a design using that yarn for our summer issue.
Oh, fantastic.
Our summer issue.
Oh, wait, no, the cotton one is, no, it's called something different.
Yeah, the cotton one is something different, but then we are also
we
will have a design using that cotton also.
Watch this space.
Watch it. Listen
to
it.
And then knit it.
What else happened and is happening? Ah, yes. So we are in the process of organising our summer photo shoot.
Yay.
Which is exciting.
I remember the sun. I remember summer.
So in preparation for the summer, we will be taking photos of people wearing exciting knitwear very soon. So that's all very exciting. What else is going on? Ah, yes. We have our knit-along, our spring knit-along on the Pom Pom Ravelry group, where you can post pictures of any finished object from a Pom Pom magazine. Any magazine, doesn't have to be the spring one. Also could be from the blog.
Ooh.
And you can win an exciting prize.
What's the prize?
The prize is some wonderful Kettle Yarn Company yarn.
Oh.
Donated by the lovely Linda.
She is lovely.
She is lovely. Yes, so that's the Pom news. News.
And reviews.
Reviews.
So we have a copy of Knitbot Yoked, which was actually, we had it on a pom-pom giveaway.
Mm-hmm, yes.
So some lucky person won that. But here I am holding my own copy, and it's gorgeous. I've just been showing it to Lydia because she hasn't seen the book yet. Oh, have you? I don't know.
I have seen it, yes. Yeah. But, I mean, you just can't really get tired of something so nice, can you? It's like the knitted heart that is also with us here. Can't stop enjoying it.
Sometimes I just throw it at people. Just like, hey, that's a tech.
We should make a zombie film where all the zombie body parts that get, like, eaten and torn out are knitted.
You could just get, well, this is quite heartbreaking to say it, but it just unravels. So it's, like, being torn apart. Like, unravels. But that's quite sad. Lily looks really sad in what I said about knitting unraveling now. So this is a dangerous topic. Let's get away from it.
Back to Knitbot Yoked.
This book is gorgeous.
Yes.
It just makes me feel happy.
And what does it contain?
It contains knitting. No.
Patterns?
It's a really gorgeous collection of mainly jumpers, some cardies as well, and a little cheeky bonus hat and mitt set at the end. And they're all knit from the top down. They're all as the title suggests, you know, mainly yoked.
Mm-hmm. And there, I see a little colour work.
Yeah, yeah, and it's really nice. Like the palette that's used in the book is very sort of soft, springy. You know, there's a lot of duck egg blues and greys, and the photography is like very kind of that golden hour sunshine. Mm-hmm. You know, sunset kind of mood. And I love it.
Do you have a sort of front runner for what you'd like to knit from it?
Well, initially my list is all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've narrowed that down. There's a really beautiful cardi with like a little swallow band around the top. So a little bit, I think a swallow is a little bird. Yeah, it's a swallow, it's a little birds. So it's like a pale kind of blue in the sample with the sort of the yoked band. It's these sort of flying birds.
Very nice.
Which is really nice. It's also a front cover image, which is the Willard Fair Isle pullover.
Yes, I want to make that one too.
Yeah?
I love a good zigzag.
Yeah, it's mainly just plain. A lot of them, I think that's one of the things I like about it. It's just they're really simple designs, which is sometimes what you want in it.
Yeah, but with a little bit of flair, isn't it? That's the one thing that Knitbot does very well, is very wearable, kind of simple but special.
Yeah, you can definitely follow these patterns to, you know, the letter.
Mm-hmm.
To the stitch, yeah. But then they've got a really good classic, you know, they call it the basic round yoke unisex pullover,
mm-hmm.
which is what it says on the tin.
Yeah.
But I think within that there's like opportunity to work with that, you know, change the design.
Yeah. Well, a good basic jumper pattern is a special thing.
Yeah.
It's a rare and beautiful thing. So that's Knitbot Yoked by Hannah Fettig, as featured on the Pom Pom blog a few months ago. Still rocking it, still strong.
What is?
The book!
Oh, right.
And Pom Pom, obviously.
I thought you meant Pom Pom. Like, the blog still exists.
Go there. Not right now, though, because we're still talking about things.
Our guest for this episode is Anna Maltz. Anna is a pom-pom contributor, artist, and design director for the Ricefield Collective. Sophie went to meet Anna in her studio in Hackney for a cup of tea and a chat.
So, hello, Anna.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Sophie.
And thanks for inviting me around, actually.
Oh, lovely to have you here.
Here we are in your lovely studio, but do you spend most of your time here, or how do you organise yourself?
I try to come to my studio every day. I try to keep the majority of my knitting things here. So that I at least need to pop in.
Definitely. But knitting's quite a portable thing, so where do you like to knit? You say knits here, but are there other locations where you like to knit?
I knit anywhere, yeah. And I think really that was why I started knitting a lot. So at art school, I sort of didn't like the idea of how secluded a painter's life was, or a sculptor, where you have to very specifically be by yourself. Not necessarily, but there is that sort of myth of an artist in a garret kind of suffering for their art, and the idea of knitting, which has such a social history and is such a communal thing to do, and it's about making things for other people very often, and it's about doing it while you chat, felt like a really nice way to make work.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, I do have different projects for the situation I'm going to be knitting in. So I've got the ones that I take when I know I'm going to be knitting with a lot of friends and I don't want to be counting, or I don't want to be writing a pattern down. So that's what garter stitch is perfect for, you know, it's like the most social stitch around. And yeah,
I like that. Garter stitch is a social stitch.
Yeah.
That's a new tagline for it. Lace, I need to concentrate.
Yeah.
Lovely. Okay, so people might have read about you in the spring issue, which is Pom Pom number 8, which is out recently. The podcast, A Playful Day, told you a little bit more about you. But you've done a lot of work with inner city schools in London, sort of doing art and knitting. Could you tell us a bit more about that? And why do you do it? And what do you like about it?
It's lovely introducing a new generation in a way to knitting, but also like shaking up the idea of what, like, their preconceived notions of what knitting is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the really nice things about knitting is that it includes a lot of different things. For example, in a school setting, it's quite a sneaky way to work in maths. But it's also such an innocuous thing, which everybody writes off as being something that boring people or grannies or nice ladies do, that within that space you can actually get away with quite a lot, and a lot of conversations where it's such a conversational thing to do, where you can talk with students about things and about, you know, making things, about how long it takes to make things, about what, why we don't make things anymore, and what happens if we do make things, and the power involved with having control over the choices of what you want to make and what you want to do, I think also inherently makes you a very different consumer. So it opens up the space to have unexpected conversations.
Mm. Do you find that, is it initially, you know, people have sometimes preconceptions about knitting, do you find it's negative and then you turn that positive, or are people quite open to knitting when you come to schools?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the teachers have invited me in, so they know and they're on board. Although very often the first conversations will be along the lines of, we're very concerned that it might just be interesting to our small minority of white middle class girls at the school.
Right, okay.
And I always suggest that I think they'll be pleasantly surprised. And then at the end, it's like, prove them so wrong.
We have to, like, do it genteelly, like, yeah, maybe
you'll be shocked, you know. So that's a really nice thing. And I think every time I've gone in, and the first time I will meet a group, there'll be sort of secretive, sort of furtive phone use under the table, or just a bit grumpy faces. And somebody will, you know, I like to start it with saying, so what do you know about knitting? What do you think? And somebody will always be brave and ballsy enough to go, boring people do it. That's for old people. And then it's really nice after an hour of chatting where I show my work and the range of things that I do with it, that they then actually start having a go and get into it. So, and I've done a project at a school where we looked at the school's history, so we knitted a timeline together, and then wrote written memories on the knitted timeline. And the school had been there for 120 years, so it was looking at that history, and then also interviewing past students. So it became about their memories too, all hung on the knitted thing. And I think that because that was knitting, it is a point where across generations people can engage in it.
Definitely, yeah. So it's that thing so often that it's passed down, you know, my grandmother's taught me, and then...
Yeah, and I think that the conversations with teachers too, like in a lot of cases, they've kind of thought of it as almost like the 80s was a bit of a lost generation, because it became this thing where, you know, girls were doing science and girls were doing technology and girls were doing these things, and they didn't say, and boys are doing knitting and boys are doing cooking, because all of these things are good for everybody to do. Instead it was, well, girls are doing science and technology now, and let's just leave all of those cooking things and knitting things, which are actually really good, really powerful skills for everybody to have.
So maybe we talk about your work for a little bit. So I have to mention it, which is, you know, the knitted naked suits.
Yes.
You have to tell me more about these. Like, what was the impetus behind those? And so do you still have them?
I do. I've considered them my tools for making the photographs and for making the situations in which they're worn, and that's always been at people's houses. So I've always, for the nude suits, I've always worked with friends or friends of friends, because it's a fun thing to do, and also because then there's a trust in place. Like, I know them, they know me, they know I'm not a weird person, or they know what sort of an odd person I am, and I know that they're doing it because it's fun and they know more about the project and they've chosen to be involved. And it's always been pictures of families, but not necessarily totally blood-related families, because we make families in all sorts of different ways. Yeah, and I think it started off with, because I knitted the Superman suit first and was really thinking about sort of ideas of stereotypes and heroes and the idea that they're a really mixed blessing or like a mixed bag, because I think heroes, it's really great, heroes are important, right? But I'm a much bigger believer in everyday heroes rather than like a sort of magical one that comes and has sweeps in and sorts everything out in a sort of all-powerful, omnipotent way. Yeah. Like, I'm coming to sort this out. And because that makes the things that we can do to help each other so much less. Mm. But yeah, so then looking at heroes and ideal characters, I thought like, oh, Adam and Eve, right? They're this sort of stereotypical white heterosexual couple. And so I set about knitting them, and that was when the Yorkshire Mohair Mill was still there. So I ordered giant cones of mohair and they arrived and I over-ordered. So suddenly I had enough, you know, what do you do when you have enough time and equipment and materials? Mohair. You make babies.
Yeah.
You know, so then it was a case of making a whole family, and I wanted to base it on a particular family rather than sort of any family, because I did a lot of looking at ergonomics and standard sizing and realized that that wasn't super satisfying. So I based it initially on my neighbors. So the size of the kids was based on them, and no, I didn't see them in the nude. That was all sort of fantastical.
You're very busy doing lots of knitting in London, but also you're based elsewhere with the Rice Fields Collective. How did that start?
So that is another sort of, that starts again with a friendship, and I did a master's in San Francisco, finished in 2004, and one of my very good friends there, Meredith, was very jealous about me knitting through lectures and through artists' talks, which are a bit of a mixed pot. Sometimes they're really engrossing and sometimes you're politely sitting through it.
I went to art school, I know this, yes.
Yes. So it is very nice to have your knitting along. So I taught her how to knit, and she's originally from the Philippines. And we stayed in good contact afterwards, through which I sort of kept on doing art and knitting, and she went back into to do another master's and then a PhD in poetry. And while researching poetry in the Philippines, in Ifugao, which is the mountainous region up in the north of Luzon, which is the main island, she met a woman and then a group of women and was talking with them about their lives there and about their history and how long people had been farming rice there, because they live right next to a World Heritage site, which is the rice fields of Banaue, and it's carved into the terraces thousands of years ago now. And she had her knitting along, and while they were discussing like their livelihoods and how so many of them were being forced to move to bigger cities to try to get by and having to step away from their traditions and their heritage in the rice fields, there she was knitting, and they were super curious about knitting because they'd never knitted before. And then the conversation sort of turned to, almost jokingly, could that be something that could provide, I don't know if the best term is like a supplementary income or maybe like a complementary income, so that they get to continue the farming but also learn something new, and that there is a wage attached to that, an income from that, that means they can look after their kids at the same time, and they can be in the rice field in the morning, and they can take a break for the month of harvest or the month of planting. And so, yeah, then Meredith you know, we'd been chatting about what, you know, projects that we could be involved with together. And then she met them and then she said, hey, come along. And then, yeah.
And then it went from there.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. It's an excellent project. And why do you like Instagram? You're always on there as Sweater Spotter. If anyone wants to follow Anna, that's how you find her. But what do you like about that as a medium to express yourself?
I've always been really suspicious about and a very late adopter of social media. So then a friend hassled me and was like, Instagram, I think you'll love it. So I thought, okay, let me give this a try. And it's just been lovely. Like, I find it a really, really positive place. Like, more than fussing about things, it's like people showing the things they like and the things that they do. For me, it's a really nice reminder to me about what I do.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, because suddenly, you know, there are days when you get to the end of the day and you go, what have I achieved? Nothing! I've not done anything! Like, I've answered emails, or I've done half a swatch, or I've, you know, knitted 10 rows of this or that, and it just doesn't feel like much. And then if you actually make a commitment to recording that bit and recording the little bits that happen in between that aren't a project in themselves, you actually, it's a reflection of my creative life to me, like the things that I notice.
So originally you studied art.
Yes.
But you also involved knitting. Now, knitting, we said about earlier how it sometimes gets stereotyped as, you know, the grandma's craft or whatever, which, you know, you clearly show it isn't. But is it still art if it's knitting? And what's the difference between the two? Or is there, you know, is it a fine line? Or how would you express that?
I know, I think for both of us, probably having gone through art school and having heard an awful lot about sort of the feminist art movements in the 70s and through the 80s and that, like the idea of the art versus craft, or like, can art be knitting, is kind of a bit of a boring one at this stage. But it's important to remember that not everybody has that knowledge. So for quite a few people, it is like, oh, it's knitted. Oh, it's art. Oh, God, you're doing something new there. When really there's quite a lot of heritage. And for me, starting to use knitting in my work was actually quite a bit about feeling like I didn't need to prove knitting could be used to make art. It was because it felt like those battles had kind of already been fought. But I think that it is important to kind of make a bit of a definition in there when you think about, like, I would not say knitting is art. I would say that you can have knitting that is about making a lovely thing for yourself, like a garment for you or for somebody else that's going to keep you warm and that's going to make you totally happy and that looks great. And then there's knitting things that you're intending to be art specifically. And I do think that there is a line that's more of the line that makes it the difference between the two of those things.
I mean, sometimes I felt at uni, there was sort of the idea of craft, and then craft was a dirty word that was not design or art. And then knitting kind of sometimes gets captured into that. But I think that's still important. Like, craft is still a beautiful thing that's to be celebrated. How do you feel about, you know, attaching that name to it? Or,
I mean, I think craft is great, and that's, and I think a good example of that is, like, specifically, actually, things can become craft that weren't craft before. Like, I would say with the shift to digital, like, darkroom photography, that's a craft now, but it wasn't discussed as a craft before. It's so nice, the conversations that come from knitting in public. Mm. Like, I think if I knit on the train or I knit on the bus, it's a good marker too, because when I knitted on the train or on the bus 15 years ago, those conversations were generally about, like, oh, I haven't seen anybody do that in a long time, or I've never seen somebody your age knitting on the bus. And now it's a much more, it tends to be sort of other people who knit as well, being like, oh, I wish I had my project with me, or like, so nice to see somebody else knitting. Or it still is the curious thing, or it will be that conversation of like, oh, that's quite fashionable now, isn't it? That's really in.
Oh, it's the phrase, oh, knitting's coming back, isn't
it?
Yeah,
like, yes, you know, it's
quite a while.
Yes, it's been coming back and back again, and here it is again. Yeah. And yes, we're still doing it. And yeah.
I was using a knitting dolly the other day, and that made people, like, people kept stopping and talking to me, and they're like, you know, used to make that with a reel of cotton and nails. And I was like, yes, I know. But they were like telling me, it's like, that's, you know, this is how people used to do it. You should know this. And I was like, I am aware of that, but thank you.
We no longer have cotton reels made of wood. It's a little bit, you know.
It's sad, but I wanted to understand that I knew the heritage of it. You know, it was more I wanted to convey that I appreciated the craft.
You can, next time, you can advise them that it is possible to make one with a tampon applicator, a plaster, and some hair clips. If you tape it together.
That is such a good idea.
I've done that, and you can choose to do it with red wool if you would like to, you know, if you want to.
Just to stay within the theme.
Within the theme, you know, because every time you see those things advertised, you know, like baby nappies, it's always blue water that gets poured on there.
Yeah,
because blue is clean. Blue is water.
We're so calm when this thing's happening as well.
Yeah. Blue is never the colour that will be in there in a nappy. And if it was, we have a problem. Yeah.
What are you feeding this child? Okay, so colour seems to be an important part of your style and your work. So where do you find your colour combination inspiration?
Like, I'm really curious. Like, I love colour and I'm fascinated by it. And I think I'm also, like, sometimes colour inspiration will come from actually just finding something so disgusting that I sort of have to sit with it for ages. Like, I remember seeing this Howard Hodgkin print that was just foul. It was like, it was orange and green and like veering with a little bit of red and a little bit of yellow. And I remember seeing it and thinking, that is grim. Like, that's grim. And then you go out and you feel a little bit guilty, right? Like, a little bit bad. Like, hate isn't a good thing to walk around with. And then a year later, I walked out of the house and I realised I was wearing a green mac and an orange dress underneath. And it was like, wow, I've really been sitting with that colour combination for so long. And then, of course, then it's like that question of like, oh no, is it still direly ugly? But I've just been thinking about it for so long.
It's just sat in your subconscious waiting to...
Or have I like worked out how to make it nice? Like, I think that, you know, like ferrule knitting, like I'm totally fascinated by how that works. And like any colour work knitting, like when you take the composite colours of that, you don't really have an idea of how that will play together until it's actually together. But then the balance also comes into play, because if you put, like, if the red is a hint, it will be a very different thing of if the red is the main colour. And, you know, like with five colours and one pattern, you can do so many different variations already that, yeah, I don't know. Well, I think a lot of it comes down to is like, I don't know, I think there's so many colours and it's so exciting. Like, why would you not, like, love that bit of it? And why would you, I don't know, how would you choose?
I was going to say, do you have a favourite colour?
I have lots of favourite colours, but I think, like, I avoid black, certainly for knitting, because it's not the most pleasant, you know, it's a hard colour to keep track of while you're knitting. It hides a lot of the things. But yeah, like black clothing, I wouldn't know. Then you have to sort of choose on, like, you have all those racks of black and how do you choose, right? Whereas if you go, I don't know, I'm a big charity shopper and you go in and like the chances of something fitting you is small anyway, but if there's an amazing yellow thing, like it's easy to pick out. So yeah, I think that I definitely have colours that I know I go back to. Like, I really like a really bright, like, where orange goes into red and goes into pink. So whether that's like a coral or a vermilion, that type of thing, like almost fluorescent, like that's really satisfying. Peachy pink, like really soft, like sort of, you know, like old fashioned underwear.
Yeah, I love, like, how your face changed. There was like an intensity of the pink and then like the peach, and you kind of softened, like, oh.
Yeah.
I'm just living the colours, yeah. I love it.
Dark blue, like soft grey. And then there's colours that really like remind me of specific people. Like turquoise is my friend Zoe, and moss green is my sister, and, you know, sort of purple, like lavender purple, is definitely my oma, so my grandmother on my mum's side. And so when I wear those colours or when I use them, it's also about like thinking about them.
Yeah.
And then taking those colours on in my life is almost sort of a part of the function of that friendship. It's like, I like you. Those are your colours. And now I have this colour a little bit too, but when I wear it, I think about how nice you are.
Absolutely, yeah. It's like, well, the colour you're wearing, the kind of chartreuse green, is very much Megan, the editor of Pom Pom. I always think that's Megan's colour. So yeah, definitely, I can understand that connection.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, thank you, Anna. I had a lovely time chatting to you.
It's been lovely talking to you, Sophie.
Excellent. Well, no doubt we'll be seeing you soon, maybe in an issue of Pom Pom or in the future.
Quite possibly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Take care. Bye.
Bye bye.
Okay, and we move on to Colour of the Cast,
where we discuss a colour in great detail.
Today's colour. This week's colour? This season's colour.
Is orange. Orange is the new black, people. Get with the programme.
Get with the reference.
So, fun facts about orange include that the word orange used to begin with an N. It's mm-hmm. actually a word which comes from, I believe, Persian, maybe Tamil, something like that. Anyway, it used to have an N at the beginning. And when it was in French, it began with an N, but then the N disappeared due to a sort of confusion where people weren't sure if you were saying the sort of French equivalent of either a norange or an orange. The word for the fruit came before the word for the colour. So the colour was named after the fruit in English.
Mm-hmm.
And before then, so before we had a word for orange, the colour, it was referred to as red, yellow, or yellow red. Which sort of makes a lot of sense.
Makes sense, but orange is pretty good. So, other interesting facts about orange. The black box recorders in flights on aircraft are actually bright orange, so they can be found more easily.
So they're not, wait, they're not black?
No, they're not, but they're originally called black boxes.
Mm.
Because early, the early prototypes for the electronics were stored in black metal boxes.
I see. I mean, I guess that makes sense, actually, because looking for a black box, well, that's more difficult than looking for an orange box.
Yeah. Not many things are orange. You know.
Yeah. But also, did you know, and anyone who has looked at the recipe from our spring issue may know this fun fact. I mean, maybe everyone else knew it, and I was just really excited when I found out. But bergamot is actually a type of orange.
Which is why you get bergamot in your citrusy teas, like Lady Grey.
So as for orange, the word, in other languages, here's an exciting fact about Spanish. In Spanish, anaranjear means literally to orangicate, to pelt something with oranges.
How often is that used in language?
I don't know, but I mean, maybe we should sort of have a British, an English, because orangicate is kind of rubbish, isn't it? We need to come up with a better, like, British version. Like, or...
Well, no, because the British version, if you think about it, is being tangoed. People may remember the adverts from must be early 90s. I remember when I was a kid and you'd been tangoed, and that was
quite scary, actually.
Yeah, it's quite weird. I think there's some story where some kid got perforated eardrums from that, like being slapped around. If anyone's seen, you can find it funny on YouTube or whatever. Like, it's kind of being like bashed, like kind of grabbed around the head, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then they changed it, and then they got kissed or something weird. Ah, the 90s.
Oh, Tango.
Tango.
What other fizzy drinks are orange flavoured?
Iron Brew.
Fanta. Iron Brew. Iron Brew's not orange flavoured, it's just orange.
No, I got excited about oranges.
Iron Brew is actually made from steel girders. Or iron girders.
This is true. This is true.
Says the Scottish people.
Anyway, orange in knitting, in the knitting world. There's some good oranges in the world. What are your faves?
Well, the jumper I'm knitting for my brother, it's arguably a kind of brown, but it's definitely, I feel like it's a very orange brown.
Mm-hmm.
It's to me, it is orange. It is called wool socks.
Mm.
Which really could mean almost any colour, actually, if we're honest.
Yeah. Also, Uncommon Thread, who does some great neutrals, but some zingy hot colours as
mm-hmm.
well. Citrus is one of hers, and as you'd expect, it's orange.
It's nice, and it's orange.
Oh, great.
And doesn't Madeleine Tosh also have a colour called Citrus?
Yes.
Which is orange.
Which is also orange.
And she also has a colour called Tomato, which is a really great red, but it's a very orange red.
Mm, yeah, yeah. Which I am fond definitely. Of. I think I've never knit anything orange. I think I like orange, but knitting, I haven't made that step yet.
Yeah, I like orange a lot. Actually, orange is my dad's favourite colour. And my brother's favourite colour. Maybe it's just a boy.
Maybe it's just hereditary, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. They've got the orange gene.
You missed that gene. They're doling them out in the pool. hypothetically, you're running your wool business mm-hmm. that you're going to start, obviously, one day.
Yeah.
What's your yarn colour, the orange called?
Oh, wow. Nothing rhymes with me.
That's a good one. Yes, because nothing does rhyme with orange.
No.
I did think I'd cracked this when I was younger, when I heard about this, and I thought, oh yeah, but Borange, that...
Well, yeah, what about Borange? If you had a yard range, what would you call it?
Well, no.
What would you call your orange?
What would I call my orange? I would call it, like, Penguin Fiction Classic, because that's the colour of the...
It's true.
The books. Oh.
That's a winner.
I'm really pleased with that. That would be good.
Mm. Well, going back to how nothing rhymes with orange...
Mm-hmm.
I actually looked up all the words that make half rhymes with orange, of which there are several, including lozenge, Stonehenge, or porridge.
You're kind of scraping the barrel with these, but...
Hey man, the barrel wasn't... There was hardly anything left. In fact, I haven't even scraped... This is just the barrel. The insides were gone long ago.
You just lifted the lid and like, oh, this just... It's just disappeared.
Hey, this is empty! No one's using it! I can keep it! So, in conclusion... Oranges are inspiring. So we have whittled down our top fives to top threes for the purposes of not wasting your precious ear time or our precious air time. Okay, so this week the top threes will be crisp flavours, another controversial, highly political topic.
You see, for me... There's only one flavour. For you, you're varied and exotic within your flavours.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like me to share?
Okay, so at number three, I have pickled onion Monster Munch. And I love pickled onion flavoured crisps. They make you quite stinky.
I'm actually feeling a little physically sick by you.
Just did you just puke in your mouth a little bit?
I just remembered being in the playground just being like, oh God, those crisps.
No, they brought them back recently in like a kind of exciting... in-your-face ad campaign style, and I have been loving it. I've eaten loads of them. I keep buying multi-packs. You know, it just makes you friends when you smell of pickled onions. It's just, you know, people start following you around. You're like the Pied Piper.
Pickled Piper.
The Pickled Piper, exactly. Okay, so at number two, we have... Now, this is a boring thing, and everyone's going to think I'm super boring, which maybe I am, but number two is I just like ready-salted Walker's crisps.
I can agree. Well, I can find love for that. That's a classic.
They're like a vessel. You can dip them in hummus, and actually, my favourite... They're a vessel for greatness.
Mm, I like it.
Like a cracker. Like a really salty. Unhealthy cracker. but my favourite snack with them is to get a bag of salted crisps... Some slices of cucumber and some grated cheddar. And on each crisp, I put a piece of cucumber and some cheddar. And then they become exciting snack bites.
It's amazing. That's kind of like sushi almost.
Yep, I pretty much got my own like
really
food
English
culture.
Sushi. Yeah. It's fusion food.
Yeah, I'm all about fusion food.
What's number one?
Well, now this will come as no surprise to anyone who knows me. Number one is Whatsits.
This is no surprise to me, Lydia.
They are orange, they are cheesy, they are a funny shape for no reason, they have a silly name, they get orange powder over everything all the time.
That's why I can't love them.
You can like sort of, they sort of dissolve in your mouth, you don't even need to crunch them.
Just cut out of the middle, man.
And actually, with a carton of Ribena, super snack. Snack attack. Go on then, Sophie. Beat that.
I can't really beat it. I don't know. For me, there's only one true love of Christmas, which is salt and vinegar. I mean...
Wow, how did I not include that in my top three?
Well, you know, when you were saying about ready salted crisps, I was like, yeah, it's okay. But if you suppose there was a big selection of crisps and you were like, oh, everyone's eaten the salt and vinegar and now I've just got ready salted, I'd feel cheated. I'd feel a bit like, well, I don't even want the crisps now.
Would you want the ready salted ones more than the smoky bacon ones?
Oh, yes, because that just, again, makes me sick. I don't know what my prejudice with crisp flavours
is. What's the deal with smoky bacon and prawn cocktail anyway? Because are they not just basically the same flavour?
Whoa, maybe we need to have a taste test one day.
A Worcester sauce, that was also the same. Anyway. Back to Sophie.
So I go, but then I thought about it, and if it's a treat day, I'd go with, number three, I'd go with plain hula hoops.
Mm.
Because, you know, you can put them on your fingers, and I mean, that's entertaining anyway.
Well, that's pretty much the best attribute that a snack can have, that it will fit around your finger.
Like comedy value.
Yes. Actually, one of my friends who got married is a professional hula hoop dancer, and they had bags of hula hoops everywhere at the reception.
That's perfect.
I know.
Okay.
Delicious.
Does this move from three to two? No, it doesn't. Because at number two, salt and vinegar chipsticks. A classic.
I love chipsticks.
Yeah, it's a really like childhood playground thing to have chipsticks. And because you could just, they're satisfying, man.
They're super salty and vinegary, aren't they? They're like extra super flavour. Like that.
Yeah. Good. So number one, it would have to be salt and vinegar McCoy's.
McCoy's. Real McCoy's?
Real McCoy's. But, you know, what's with their current campaigning that they're man crisps? I can't deal with stereotyping of genders within a crisp.
Oh, product. Like with Yorkie bars.
Yeah.
Not for girls!
No, what's that? What's that about? You know, there used to be an ad. I don't know why my advert knowledge is so in-depth, but 80s advert, the Yorkie guy was really friendly. He drove his van, he drove his lorry, and he'd let old ladies go out in front of him. But now, I can't deal with this.
Damn you, McCoy's.
I know. So maybe I can just go for kettle chips.
Yeah.
Posh crisps.
Posh crisps all the way.
So yeah, let's go with some crisps.
Pomcast is produced by Lydia Gluck and Sophie Scott, with lots of help from Eli Block, who created the original music for this show. You can listen to more music by Eli by visiting goodgirlandthebadtimes.com. Also, big thanks to Megan Fernandez, who is the co-creator and co-editor of Pom Pom Magazine. Also, thank you to Anna Maltz, our lovely interviewee. And a big thank you to all you Pom Pom buyers, subscribers, and listeners. Bye!